100 nanoseconds, so I made a program to do estimates for each of the traces, and each one of them takes about a week.
About a week, okay. Alright, so each one a week.
Yeah.
Alright, each one. Interesting.
Interesting. I was able to also reach that adaptive insertion thing.
Okay.
Which sounds interesting because it's also a bit of what we were doing actually with our bimodal idea.
Yeah.
Where we let it hit anyways, but we were trying to also control whether we were going to populate anything or insert anything into the cache as part of the bimodal part.
You said the clock ticks every 100 nanoseconds.
Yeah.
Alright, so do we have any charts to look at on your laptop or somewhere else? Or
not really.
Not yet.
Because the charts I tried to come up with, the frequency distribution, one, I'm just plain having problems. When I try and have it go, I don't know if it's the fact that there's just so many different addresses that the program just seems to stop and doesn't go any farther. Or what? But if I just have it
plot. So using a hash map, looking at all the addresses within that phase, and adding counters to it.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then sorting and plotting them, right?
And sorting them and everything, yeah, pretty much. So I have them sorted out. They have a text file, that's just fine. It's in the Git right now. The results for each one of those text phases. And the names are formatted for the phase name and from what access number to what access number.
Okay.
A lot of this is estimated.
Okay.
So, eyeballed it.
Okay. So, this is manual.
Yes, yeah, this is manual.
Can we turn that down? I don't know what to do. A
lot of big stuff up here. Paintings that are standing on the walls. So basically, it was just keep getting each line until we are at the right access number.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as long as we're in between the two values, we keep working on the map or the hash map.
Yeah. Okay.
The counting. And that's it. At the end, we sorted it in order.
Yeah.
And then output it as appropriate. With the address number and the counter.
Right. So, Jason, for your information, what Stephen has been doing is to try to create a similar set of charts as the one in the paper right now. I sent you a copy of that, right?
Oh,
so that's a mock-up, right? Yeah, right. That's just for illustration.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what Stephen is doing is using actual data, detecting phases at this point manually, and trying to come up with plots that look like that.
Okay. And it's working on all these traces.
Right.
These traces.
I'm actually modifying this a little bit. I think this is going to be a central plot. So, for instance, I'm going to drop a line here as well and do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's a face.
So this is a working set, and that is also a working set. So what I'm saying is that there are working sets at different levels of importance, matching different granularities.
That's true. Yes.
And so this is, if you look at this, this is working set N, which fits in cache level N.
Yeah.
The next working set N plus one will not fit in cache level N, and this will be true for any cache with sufficiently large working sets.
So my question here is, there's a little time here. So this is time to the entire trace.
No, this is only one phase. This is one.
Oh, you detect
phase.
A phase first, and
first
then
you detect a phase, then you create this
the
plot.
Phase. Okay, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but even within a single phase, there are many granularities of working sets. So,
because that's
and they all fit in different levels of the cache hierarchy. So the smaller working set will fit maybe in the CPU cache, L1 cache, or L2 cache, and then the next, and so on.
Yeah, the question for that, although, is you have different units you're working with, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So CPU actually...
It will be much smaller.
Much smaller.
The cache line will be much smaller, which will be, say, 16 or 32 or 64 bytes.
Yeah, they're highly associative. They are, you know, all sort of...
Right.
Kind of tricks in the CPU cache.
That's
different, right?
So you're right. We shouldn't talk too much about what's going on here, but just focus on these two points.
Right. So these are what I see. These are the effect of composition, right? So basically, there are if you say, well, frequency defines the main characteristics of the traces. So because that's your x-axis here. So that means that if a axis, say right here, right? So for this particular axis, and then, you know, the difference between that particular axis and this one, right? So that's obviously maybe belonging to two different applications.
Possibly, or even the same application but different data.
Sort of a different access pattern.
Right, so for instance, think about Amazon.com. The main Amazon.com web page is probably a lot more popular than some of the internal pages, some specific product and so on.
Right. Yeah.
Right, so it's similar to that.
Yeah, similar to that, yes. So, and also there is a composition effect, because there is no clear definition of it. Of a phase,
yeah.
So, I'll talk
well,
about
we,
to you
we
about
are
this.
Defining phase in a specific way in this paper. We are saying that when the access frequency, the set of data that is accessed becomes stable and doesn't change, then it's a new phase.
Right. Yes. Well, you mean the cache miss rate.
And we are arguing that also leads to stability of cache miss rate.
Right.
Because you can only contain so much in the cache of the,
right.
all the set of data that are being accessed.
So, but I would address these issues. You mentioned several observations. I think that making this paper a lot stronger would be do something else, sort of say, well, we look at a phase and the phase exists,
right.
and we look at a very clear pattern. There's a phase, and sort of using some metrics to show there's phase exists, and you know, there are assumptions about within the phase, the cache behavior stabilizes.
That is the main point, because
right.
the existence of phase is already well established in the literature.
True, yes.
But the stability issue is not, you know, people may agree with you or may not agree with you. So you have to show data.
You have
to
show data, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of those those things actually would.
So which is what Stephen is doing right now. He's trying to recreate similar plots as this. They may not look as nice as this or as clean as this.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's anywhere similar, then we can still claim this is happening.
What are you trying to show here? I mean, this is a within one phase.
Within one phase, so
we have a clear. Not just assumption, but actually can substantiate this assumption that phase is there. Because phases, you cut it the way, may distort whatever the result here, right? You say my sensitivity of a phase is actually more sensitive, so a little bit change here actually causes the...
Right, so you might have missed some of the things that Stephen and I have been talking about. So for instance, let me show you here, right?
Perfect one.
Which one should I pick? Source 2?
I think Source 2 is what should be. Okay, I think one of the other ones, though, like 1 or 2.
Like here, maybe?
Particularly.
This one? This looks nice. Yeah?
Yeah, that's the setting for the most part.
Okay, so what's happening here is that on the x-axis is time.
Time, yeah.
The y-axis is how many unique axes that we are seeing at each axis number. So initially you add a few, and then there is some stability here that you don't add any new ones until much later. And then you add more new ones. And then you get to a point where you stop adding new ones, and it's all the items that are accessed are stuff that have been accessed before. So you can think of this as a phase. because there is stability of all the items that are being accessed, and so on. So
well,
this is
hold on. So there has to be a when you say adding. Oh, this is like infinite cache size, right? So you
yeah,
are
yeah.
just looking
yeah.
at the
yeah.
You know, okay. So everything new, you just count it as a unique access
yeah.
you added to that. Okay, yeah, it makes sense. So there are transition period. So
there
you mentioned the transition period there should be should
2% of, but in this case it's not. It's
it's
happening a lot.
It's 1/3 almost.
It's, yeah, it's a lot. And this here is it's not clear if this is a single phase or if this is also part of that same phase because there's stability again.
Right.
So it's so there is the numbers that are quoted in Denning's paper, right?
But that's like 70s and 80s. So 70s, that's,
and that's for main memory traces. It's not for storage traces.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
The expectation is that a similar behavior will also exist for storage traces. And that's part of the reason why we are doing this.
So let me ask you this question. You know this view. So something like the recent block traces, I mean, you know, there are cloud computing, there are all sort of things that are happening over the past 10 years, right? And are there any sort, you know, if the paper say, you know, trace demystifier or something like that, so you, there are people's assumptions sort of somewhere else, and do they have evidence for those things, or is that worthwhile for us to actually publish a paper and say, we analyzed the traces, and the first assumptions of, you know, the traces
that's what
are
is happening today. Everyone is basically analyzing their own set of traces. Some of our FIU traces are very popular for that.
Right, but like this trace is a very
these
well
traces
published.
Are also very popular.
Right.
But what people end up doing is that they pick workloads that are favorable for the case that they are making. And they're not saying that whatever they're doing is going to work for all workloads. They're saying that here are some workloads for which these techniques seem to offer a lot of benefits.
When you say these workloads, you mean whether those workloads are actually observed at the back-end server or is actually at the front-end, is having
yeah.
different attributes and so on and so forth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to use the right set of workloads.
Or cloud computing environment.
Anything.
Transactions. And
right. So the reader will, what the reader is expected to take away from such papers is that if my workload is like that workload, then I should be using those techniques. But
okay.
if my workload is not like that workload, then I should probably do my own research.
So
I want to use that.
Because this is from my experience.
Yeah.
Some
let me finish.
Right.
So there are papers where they say that, okay, you know, the reviewers will say, okay, it's good you're doing, your stuff works for this workload, but what about other workloads? Can you show us a couple of workloads where your stuff fails?
Yeah.
So that people understand what kind of workloads are actually, paired well with the kind of optimizations
right.
you're doing.
So we should
present
the
workloads that are...
The reason I'm saying that, this is, just strategic-wise, and that it's related to this paper, but it's actually more fundamental.
Sure.
A paper like that got most impact.
Which one?
The things of the fundamental things. I mean, I worked in a group, actually published a paper before about wireless communication.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And that got like, you know, about 1,000 hit, you know, citations.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for that is when they talk about it, they say, well, this is a base assumption that people are making, and this assumption is right or wrong. We actually have some evidence
mm-hmm.
to show. So what I'm saying that, you know, this could be something we can spend some time, and that is, well, this technique would actually certainly, you know, benefit from that, but a fundamental paper like that published, you can just wait and see the citations are going to grow every year by hundreds.
Oh, sure. I mean the whole goal with this paper is to create such a fundamental paper if at all possible, right?
Well, no, this is a particular about the technique, right? You have a very unique idea. That technique is sort of turning things on and off, not being thought about before. What I meant here is, even sort of like, you know, let's establish ground truth. What kind of workload, what kind of, you know, the faces, for example. It's like faces actually is more obvious in this setting kind of trace. It's less obvious in that. So we quantify this thing. And that actually is a fundamental fact that hopefully everybody would be able to get and, you know, to continue their research. That's why it actually can be cited very, mm-hmm. very easily that way. The same is true within a phase. What kind of stability would that be? And that would be some, you know, I guess I'm just geared the conversation to a different direction. But
no, I understand what you're saying. I think what you're saying is that there is merit in exploring a paper that just talks about properties of workloads and understanding these properties better so we can build better systems.
Yeah, I hope there's no such paper existed, but I probably there is.
There are.
There are papers,
but the thing is that there's always appreciation for more papers like that if there is new contribution. Right? So there is, for instance, a couple of papers related to trace analysis. So there is one that came out of EMC in 2008
mm-hmm.
where they analyzed NFS traces.
NFS, okay. Mm-hmm.
Santa Cruz and EMC. Right, so those two guys worked together and made a paper.
They
were looking at certain properties and said, okay, here are certain properties. And they tied the findings of that paper to a paper that was published 10 years ago.
Okay. And then to show whether
that's... NFS traces to see what holds today versus what was true 10 years ago.
Right. Okay.
So there are papers like that. But specifically with respect to stability properties of workloads, there's nothing out there.
That's what I meant. There are so many aspects of a trace to look at. I mean, people look at frequency. That's only one aspect. The frequency is particular timeless in a sense, right? The frequency is just counting, right, all the time. And it's timeless. But, you know, frequency has associations, as, you know, in terms of there's a short history, what your frequency going to look like, and so on and so forth. So, obviously, you're looking at a particular aspect and you make assumptions about it. Express stability and transition. There's a statement there. You
mm-hmm.
talk about transition is actually shorter than stability than the phases.
The thing is that they are there here in anticipation that we'll have data to support it in the rest of the paper. They may seem like assumptions at this point, but they will be gone if we cannot find the data.
Right.
They won't be in the paper.
They won't be
in
the paper. Right, yeah.
So,
I understand that.
But, at this point, I just put it in there so we have at least a clear sense of what we are looking for.
True, yeah. I fully understand that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why when you say observation, I put assumption. And that means that, you know, there has to be proof somehow.
Of course,
and otherwise, it's going to cost...
Yeah, that word is not appropriate yet. Because we don't have data in the paper.
Right.
For it. And a word like assumption cannot even support the paper.
Right, yeah, you can't. Yeah, the assumption is, your assumption is wrong. The paper is, you know, capsized entirely. But
So it has to be an observation, and it has to be supported by data. Only then it becomes an observation.
True, yeah. I'm sorry that, you know, I think that's sort of...
It's good we are having this conversation so that we're, you know, all of us are on the same page with respect to, you know, what we really want to do for the paper. And
beyond.
And I would really like to read a paper that's titled Stability in Workloads, in Storage Workloads.
Storage Workload Demystifier.
Yeah. Well, that may be a little bit difficult to write because now we're saying we're going to tell you everything about storage. But if you talk about stability properties, just that, I think that would be a nice paper to create. And we have a bunch of traces from the MSR folks, but we also have our own traces, which are a lot longer. Some of them are 3 weeks long.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are 6 months long, which we can potentially use to create that other paper.
So that's great. So you have, if I remember those traces, you have a mail server, you have a file system, NFS.
We have so file server, mail server, and something that is called online, which is a Moodle server.
That's a sort of a departmental web page.
Yeah,
web
so there
server.
You will see some. I'm expecting that you will see some phases, some popularity, and
that's yeah. And these traces, by the way, what are they?
These traces.
Cambridge traces.
Yeah.
These are the Cambridge traces.
No, right, yeah. But what are the particular properties of these traces? They are
collected by Microsoft Research, Cambridge, in their data center. And they have a bunch of different kinds of workloads.
Data center, you mean?
From their data center. From their internal data center.
Oh, internal data center. Okay, right. So that means they have computations there. They have some data processing there. Web services,
mail
exchange, email,
and
exchange.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So, yeah.
By the way, we are in the process of collecting more traces for another project, which we could potentially use for this project as well.
Is that worthwhile to write a proposal about it? I guess not yet.
We have something interesting and some work to be done.
Yeah, but it's geared toward something else. So let's talk about this first.
Yeah. Okay. So what Stephen has been doing is to visually, at this point, just visually identify such phases and create these plots for those phases.
Yeah.
And so you were summarizing what your initial findings were. Could you continue with that?
With what, the frequency distribution? For the limit of them, it has pretty much just a very small handful of all of the... this is one example image. This is Web 1. It's the phase from access number 95,000 to 180,000.
I see. Well,
there should be an estimate.
Well, I see there is a step right here. And then, if you zoom into this area, into this area, it's not much. Thousand, maybe the first thousand.
Yeah, I'm actually just. I can look at the file itself if you want.
Well, if you plot it, then it'll be easier for us to.
No, the file, I can see the.
Is it a GNU plot?
Okay.
Is it a GNU plot or something?
It's a new plot, but I guess we could just look at that.
Good, the file.
That's Web 1. So, we actually have two items with 4,377 accesses.
All the 1,400, 1,200 are all in the same group, perhaps. All the 600s are in the same group, and then all the...
So there's a bit of locality or something. And the number just quickly starts going off.
Many steps, right?
Yeah. A bunch of different ones. And as you get lower and lower, I would expect a couple more. In particular, of course, you have the final one of one axis.
There are some drops, but there are also gentle declines, right? Like smaller steps.
Yeah.
There are some big steps, and then there are several smaller steps.
And then here's just 13.
I take the log.
If you
take log, what do you see?
Log
would just make it.
No, what I meant
is
I want to see the middle. Right. So, no, that's okay. Is this the entire phase or is it just
That's one phase and frequencies of items that are accessed in sorted order.
Mm-hmm. How long is a phase like that?
We're looking for a source one. Frequency so if we want to distribute source one, is that one or two? Or is that 2-1?
That's 2-1.
Okay. 2-1 estimation. We had a few have 644. In the phase, we had 330,263 unique accesses.
Right. The thing is that when you have all these ones, right, all these ones will keep churning the cache.
Yeah, that's what I'm expecting. Is mostly just single access.
And when you look at this figure, right, if you look at this figure, the probability that your cache size is between this and here is one. I mean, it's 100%, but on an average, if your cache size is somewhere in between, let's say 50%, you'll have 100% miss rate,
yeah,
instead of what you could have had, which is a 50% miss rate.
But with the...
Because the only misses are coming from here. All of these guys are hits.
But this is just saying that, well, if you have those small ones,
mm,
would that be protected by, say, for example, if you have a 2Q kind of, what was that called?
These
DRC
are all,
or
the
something.
Problem is that all of these are at the same level of importance.
But you only access once. There are no importance.
Exactly. So they are all at the same level of zero importance.
But in that case, they only going to be,
in
they
the
will case. Not hit the main, well,
correct.
Right? There, if there
they
are
will
two,
not, they will just be in the second queue.
Right,
and
in
just
the
be pushed out in first in, first out order.
Right.
Because there is no relative importance here.
Yes.
What you really want to do is take a fraction of these and lock them in the cache.
Yeah.
So that you have had hits for at least those guys. If, I mean,
it
if, it's,
just one.
If it's one, it's not,
right.
It doesn't matter. But if it's anything more than one, it would matter.
If it's more than one, it's going to be here, right? So if you have two queues.
But if it's more than one, but all of those... Let's say there are a whole bunch of twos.
There are a whole bunch of what?
Twos.
Twos. Okay, yeah.
Whole bunch of twos. They're all at the same level of importance as far as the cache replacement algorithm is concerned. Right?
Okay. Yeah, so yeah, that's the case.
That is the problem.
Yeah.
And at the lowest level, that is the problem we are addressing.
Can you take a look at the file again? Just to take a look at... Go to the very end.
Go up and see how many ones are there. Or maybe
I would say just focus on a wide range from 2 onwards.
Just
because your ones are the ones are dominating the plot.
Yeah, for the most part, they will.
So I mean ones. And to, can you do a frequency map? I mean, that would actually solve that for sure. How many access ones, how many access twos, or how many access threes, and so on and so forth, right? So we just, look at that. And what I'm looking at, like, for example, in the network modeling domain, you look at the logs. The reason why for that is the long term dependencies and that sort of things. Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense here. Power law. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Power law, right? So you have few very frequent access,
mm-hmm,
but that degrades very fast.
Yeah.
But it has a long tail. So that's the long tail is actually what you're gonna win. Because except for the ones which are totally, those are garbage, right? They come in, they're never being.
They're not part of the working set.
They're not part of.
By definition, a working set is composed of items that are accessed at least two times.
Right. Yeah. So if that's the case, you have that, and it's a long tail that actually can make a motivation, right? So that's what motivates that somehow you have to deal with those cases there.
That's true. So what is it that you're doing at this point?
I'm just quickly trying to make the Python program do the same thing we're talking about.
Online programming. We need a frequency.
We need the distribution of the frequencies.
Yeah. And
source. Oh. Pardon me. Pardon me.
I had an illusion looking at those people. I thought that's a big TV over there.
Uh-huh. Big TV, I won't be surprised. I mean, I won't put anything beyond there for you people. They might just put a big screen up this to distract people who are having research meetings.
Anyway, so we can look at that some other time.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be online.
If you can focus on the part that's 0 to 1,000, and then we can see the steps better, because right now you just see it like a spike.
So the first 1,000 is really
First 1,000.
Largest
enemies.
And in the other algorithm, you're talking about the ranking then. And
that's
ranking,
that's a completely different algorithm.
Ranking based on what? Based on frequency?
Rank based on whatever. That algorithm is a little bit tied into the specific replacement mechanism.
I still remember the presentation.
I've been trying to get Ricardo to write something up, but I'm not having much success.
Okay. So,
what I'm looking at?
These are the numbers with.
What is the first number? Is the frequency?
First number should be the frequency, and then the second number should be the count.
Frequency. Oh, so these are not sorted.
No, just
do the sort. The output.
Just sort.
To an output, to a sort.
You know, unique sort?
Oh, yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that. Okay, so just
when you do this, run and then sort. And
pipe
the
output sort.
Oh, by the out sort, got it. So, that?
Yep.
There is a sort of the number on all of that.
Look at the
just do a man.
Sort.
Numeric sort, minus n.
Yeah. Minus n? Oh, okay.
Sorry,
I don't know why I did that.
All right, so, this is good news, right?
A whole bunch of twos. A whole bunch of threes. A bunch of fours.
These are the number of accesses and number of occurrences, right?
Yeah.
So this means that, you know, there is one address being accessed 72 times.
Yep.
Yes.
Right. That is very interesting.
Okay.
So
this is within the estimates for
access
the phase.
Access twice. That's very peculiar. Why access twice is so
it's
a read and write?
That's what the workload wants to do. Could be
it'd
be a read and write.
So we read in it, update it, and write it out.
Possibly.
So there is another level of cache somewhere.
Oh, the memory cache, yes. This is storage level first.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's possible that it's a read and write. That would be interesting.
That would be interesting, yeah.
To know what's going on there. But,
because if that happens, you can't really do much. Because there is a update going on, right?
Yeah. I'm just wondering how that affects us. I think at some point we realize that reads and writes can be treated similarly.
But how does
this work? I have to go back to that discussion.
So this is probably the trace of the houses. If we skip off the write and do the same thing again.
The thing is that writes also need to go into the cache.
Writes?
If you use a write back cache or a write through cache, those are the only two available today, then you would insert into the cache on a write.
On the upper level, right? So this is the one that you see at the at the back end, right? So basically,
these are reads and writes that are coming into the storage
system, right?
So, and we are building a cache for the storage, or we are analyzing a cache for the storage.
Right. And if that means if a reading
read will
once,
insert. Read will insert into the cache.
Into the cache, yes.
And a write will also insert into the cache, because it's either a write back or a write through cache. And in both cases, you insert into the cache.
And in this case,
that's why we decided that we can treat reads and writes as the same.
But in that case, that we don't need this cache.
What do you mean?
Well, you load it, right? And you do the back end cache, right? Whatever, the storage side cache, right? You put in the cache.
Yeah.
And the other thing is just to write it to that block.
Yeah,
you write it to the black cache, and then that one is no longer used.
No, but the thing is that the cache replacement algorithm might have evicted the read earlier.
Yes.
And therefore, you had to insert the write again into the cache.
But
it's a write back or a write through.
Right. But what I meant, I'm not talking about the other levels of cache. I'm just talking about the cache we are trying to do.
I'm talking about the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if your read misses, which is the first access.
If
you're talking about...
if you first access, yes, whatever.
Read miss, you bring it into the storage
cache. Yes.
Okay. Then the cache, and then you access other stuff.
And then,
you evict this guy.
Yeah.
Then you write that data out from memory into the storage layer.
Would I have to bring that back? Or...
No, this is a write from memory into the cache.
Oh, okay. So
if
just
it's a write through or write back, you still write into the cache. So which means it's going to evict something else.
So, yes. Here's the opportunity, right? So almost the majority of the access is like that.
This is speculative that it's a read modify write kind of access, but it could also be two reads. This thing could also be just two reads.
It would be strange. Why two reads?
Well, because there is some some image that is occurring in some page which is usually accessed two times, because first you go to one page and the image exists there. Go to the next page, and later on, at some point, the image shows up again. So you access it the second time in a workflow.
So you're talking about the misses actually happens.
Yeah.
At the upper layer cache,
right?
Smaller caches.
Right.
Right. Now, if that's true, we can't really do anything. So that means that's important. If that's not true, in the sense that there's a read, and there's a write. Right, it simply is something that actually being percolated down from the upper level cache. If that's the case, putting that in the cache is complete waste. Because
the cache replacement algorithm doesn't know that.
Well,
it doesn't know.
If we...
Which is why we are turning it off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I meant.
That's
where the opportunity comes in, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's where the company...
The number two there is very big for us.
Yeah.
And so is number three, all the numbers that that are beyond the size of the cache. So if you add up all the numbers here,
that's
right.
Negligible.
All these numbers here, you start from here.
Yeah.
Right. These are the stuff that are going into the cache.
Yeah.
And all the second column, right? You add up all of them. You get to a point where your total will increase, will go beyond the size of the cache.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we'll start missing in the cache. All of these guys will be in the cache. These guys will be in the cache. All of these guys. Let's say our cache size is 500. Okay? Then you add up all of these guys. At some point, beyond a certain value, you're not going to hit in the cache anymore.
Yeah.
And then what is worse is that we continuously, all the items that are not in the cache will all miss. Oh, sorry. Even the items that are in the cache, we still miss them. Because they are in the next bucket.
What do you mean next bucket?
Here, right? So.
Oh, you mean the. Right,
they
right,
are
right,
here.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They are here. So all of these will be hits, and then we go beyond this point.
Right, yeah.
Although
those
some
are
of
tools.
Them.
Or something like.
Those are, yeah, twos.
Those
are
tools,
yeah,
right.
I'd say they are twos.
Yeah.
We'll miss on all the twos,
and
because they don't all fit in the cache.
Okay, so if that's true, what's the benefit of turning them off?
Then we lock some fraction in the cache, so we'll hit for at least those guys. So let's say
Let's say 50% of the 2s fit in the cache.
Yeah.
But since 100% of them don't fit in the cache, all of them will miss. Any access to the 2s will miss. But on the other hand, if we lock the 50s in the cache and don't let the remaining 50s affect... lock the first 50% in the cache and don't let the remaining 50% affect them, then you'll hit for at least those 50%.
Well, okay, here is the problem. When you hit, you still don't bring benefit. What I meant is, say, you...
Oh, you do, because you're preventing a miss.
Well, the miss would actually just evacuate another... those things, right? So
because they're important. They're going to be accessed again.
So you're saying that if this is 50%,
mm-hmm.
those are the 2s. So let's say this is 2, right?
Yeah.
So these are the 2s,
mm-hmm.
right? So these are the turning
yeah.
things, right?
Yeah.
So they come in, and let's suppose the assumption is they read once, they write out.
Yeah.
You know, one read and one write.
Yeah.
Okay? So... some of them are reads, right? So most of them are reads when they come in. They have to be the reads to come in, right? So all of them are reads. And then the hit there, when you say it's a hit to retain this 50%, those hits are going to be the write hits.
Yes.
Right? So when they hit, but that
they may affect some items that are, if they're all read, modify, writes.
Doesn't matter. They're all reads.
So let's say there are 25%.
Okay, so 25%. So there's 75% here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's say 25%. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So
read, modify, write.
Yeah.
Yeah. So read, modify, write. Then it's not going. Let me think about this. So read, modify, write. Read will miss. All the reads will miss at least once. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because
if
of the writing, you have to write.
Sure,
you have to write once.
One read,
yeah, you have to write once. Yeah, right.
Yeah, if it's a read modifier, if it's one read followed by one write, there's no benefit of turning off the cache. But if it's anything else, there's benefit.
Yeah, so look at his graph, what he's showing there. This is really squeezed. This part is just the spike.
There is a large number of 3s also, and
yeah.
4s also. There are 3s and 4s in there.
Right, there are some 3s and 4s, but as I said, looking at the graph, the previous graph, that you showed the plot, there's just one spike. The rest of them is completely flat.
The reason
right.
is that that's a high number.
Right, yeah. That would, but
high
yeah.
number of accesses.
This is sorted.
Yeah,
no,
this
should
be sorted.
This is sorted, right? So this is basically that what he was showing.
Oh,
we are
not affecting the hits at all. We are affecting the hits. But the hits, what we are improving is the miss rate. Let's say there is a certain amount of hits, right? And miss rate is typically very, very small. So your miss rate is typically 0.5% or even less. Because you want your cache to be really effective, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be, you know, okay, it could be 5%, right? So from 5%, we're bringing it down to, let's say, half of that. So 2.5%. That's really what we are doing.
The miss rate. So here was what I'm thinking. First of all, in this situation, the miss rate doesn't really matter.
Okay.
From 5% to 2%, it really doesn't matter because those, if that's what I was thinking, that's what it is, the 2 axes, one read and modify and write, right? And if
that... So in that specific situation is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In that situation, it doesn't matter at all. It
doesn't matter at all.
It doesn't matter 5% or 2%, does it matter?
Right, right. Because
I'm talking about the other cases. So I agree with you that if it's a read followed by a write, for all those items, then it probably doesn't matter.
Right.
I need to think more about it, but...
Maybe we should look at the data. Maybe Stephen can help look at the data. The reason, the way to look at data is actually easy, in the sense is, you just do the same analysis, strip off the write. right? So you got another curve. That the subtraction of that those curve are the rights, right? So now if you actually have the one to be this number, whatever that number is, plus the twos and plus ones, that means it's all read after write. And if that's the case,
for the twos.
For the twos, right? Because two is the majority. That's not a sheer majority. It's an overwhelming majority. I mean, that's a magnitude there, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's a magnitude.
Well, it doesn't matter whether it's a magnitude or not. It depends on what is the cache size you're operating in. Whether you're between the 2 and 3, or whether you're between the 3 and 4, or whether you're between the 4 and 5. Right?
Well,
so, for instance,
these are all individual axes, right?
Yeah.
These axes are only 1, 2, 3, 4. You can
so,
count.
So let's say this is the frequency, right?
Right.
So here is 2, 1, 2, 3. We have several 3, 4s, and 5s, right? So we have a large number of some guy, and then we have a bunch of 5s and 4s and so on.
The x-axis being what?
This is the addresses.
Addresses.
Sorted.
And then sorted, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Right? So the twos are a little bit more.
Yes.
So twos are much more, right?
Much, much more.
Much, much more.
Yeah.
So if the cache size is here, then I agree that, you know, if these twos are just read after writes, then it doesn't matter.
But
if the cache size is between here and here,
okay,
then there is churning going on of the threes.
Right.
Or if it is here, then there is churning going on at the fours.
But we know where it is. We know. If you add all these numbers,
yeah,
all these numbers you add all together, that's probably less than, 5,000?
But the thing is that, Jason, the thing is that this is a workload. We don't know what cache size we're going to use. You give any cache size, of cache of any size, the cache replacement algorithm will use it blindly.
Yeah.
So it could be anywhere in this range.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we're saying that regardless of the cache size, for a given workload, there is this potential problem that you would run into.
Okay. Do you have penalties for doing this? So it's a certain situation.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. You have penalties.
The penalties are there if your prediction of phase is stability is not correct.
Is that just it? I mean, because what I'm thinking is, suppose what I meant by penalties is this. Suppose here's a cache size, or here's a cache size, or here's a cache size.
Right? Say the cache size is here.
So for different situations.
You mean here, the boundaries.
Right, yeah. The cache size could be anywhere,
yeah,
you know, along this line, right?
Yeah.
So suppose.
Right.
So in the generic form.
So what would happen if the cache size is just at the boundary? If the cache size is at the boundary, what we'll see is that
you still have churning.
A lot of churning in that case.
From larger ones to small.
That churning is
there will be
smaller
ones.
That's
no, there will be no churning.
No,
because
if you hit there, for example.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
No, I'm talking about this boundary.
Or here. I mean, not precise boundary. I mean, it's different.
No, I'm saying right at the step. If the cache size is aligned with the step, then there will be no churning. Because all the items are equally important and are all fitting in the cache. The only reason to churn is because items don't all fit in the cache and they are all equally important.
Right. But that's on right there is a very peculiar case.
Unlikely. But it could.
But most likely,
yeah,
it's somewhere in the middle of the step.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If it's somewhere in the step and say, I'm going to log in this part and do that part, and that penalty could be severe in the sense that.
Oh, no, there is no penalty. The thing is that churn is going to lead to more misses than if you don't churn.
So the only arguments against that is some kind of locality observer, because you don't see.
Oh, then the frequency will be higher.
No, it's a. How do I say that? Suppose all of these memory, right? I'm doing something here, I'm doing something here, I'm doing something here, I'm doing something here. So you know, they are equal frequency. I'm doing my loop, right? So do something here.
Okay.
And in your case, when you turn it off, this thing will be locked in the cache.
That's great.
Right? And whatever the doing something there is actually going to
be... It's all missed. Yeah.
And that will be severe.
As opposed to everything being amiss. As opposed to that, the alternative is everything is amiss.
In the first one, it's amiss, and then...
Everything is amiss.
No. It's only... This, oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
So this is, say this is 1,000.
Yeah.
Amiss will be only one. The 999 of them... It's a hit. If you actually
which is 1,000, all of these are
the frequency.
These
right?
All
it's a number of accesses, right?
All these guys are 1,000.
Say yeah.
All these guys are 1,000.
So
the cache
so
size is right here.
Cache size is right there.
So you can only fit.
So
this is the
block I'm accessing. Right.
Oh, that's one block.
And no, this is
all
the data.
Okay.
And what I'm doing is actually I do a sort of scientific some kind of a sweep. Algorithm. I do a lot of internal loops and internal loops and doing something here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's actually for each memory location and access 1,000 times. And then I move on to another memory location.
Oh, right. They are different phases then. Well, they are different phases. You have to look at an individual phase.
Because there is a granularity of the definition of the phase, right?
Yeah, that's if you detect phases incorrectly, then you have huge penalties. I see what you mean by taking a block and moving slowly. First, doing all the 1,000, take one item and access it 1,000 times, and then take the next item, access
well,
it
this,
1,000
this
times.
One,
when if you don't come back to the first guy, the phase for that guy is over.
Well, okay, so the phase that we haven't defined, which probably I still have a question, is the miss rate is still 1 out of 1,000, or something like that. You know, it's a miss rate is that here is continuous. I do something and then move a little bit, do something. The only thing you detect a miss is when I max rate cross to another memory location, right? So in that case, it was just a subtle change in the miss rate. And that
this,
is... That,
so that's how memory gets accessed. But when storage gets accessed, it's not like this typically.
Yeah, I don't know what application would do this. But if you do think about...
because if it's going to access the same thing 1,000 times, it's probably going to sit in memory or a cache or a higher
CPU
level.
Well, if this is actually bigger, you wouldn't be able to. You know, there are large, you know, the whatever computational physics that the people are doing, you know, the heat transfer, whatever they do the still, you know, small calculation. That calculation, by the way, has a lot of data points, and those data points can be contained in memory in those cases. I mean, we don't have traces for scientific applications here.
No.
We only have transactional, you know, those are sort of the typical applications. Which is fine, which probably not going to generate that. But what I'm saying is there is a risk somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Potential risk. And if the cut is there, there is loss. So
I think at the very minimum, we have to have a good accuracy of phase detection. If we don't have good phase detection, then we are liable to increase the miss rate even more than a vanilla system which doesn't have an on-off capability.
Mm-hmm.
So the other day, Stephen and I were talking about this ghost LRU idea, which is to simulate a ghost replacement algorithm which doesn't have on-off capability.
Right, so you just set aside that's an algorithm part.
Yeah,
right.
Not
you
the
just,
contents.
Not the contents.
So simulate that.
Reference.
Yeah, and so you see whether you're doing better than that guy or not. And if you're not, you fall back. So this is like a cheating approach, right? I mean, I call it
You detect approach. Phases. You use that to detect phases, right?
Maybe you can use it to detect phases. Maybe phase detection just using one metric, which is the miss rate stability, is not the best way or not good enough, right?
Yeah.
So we might need other metrics. So one of the other metrics that we looked at is the set of new blocks that are accessed.
Yeah.
And maybe use that as another indicator of, now I'm in a new phase.
It could,
phase change.
So,
Right, that sort of. So that's so combination of such metrics may.
I think for that particular phase that we're talking about, that particular data set we're talking about, those two are dominant because 90%, probably more than 90%. If I look at that figures, that's probably there is a scale of 10 at least there.
So you should ideally get all of those guys in the cache.
Or you don't care. You don't really put them in the cache because read after write, right? And there is no benefit because you bring it in and you update. That one needs to go out. So whether it's in the cache or not in the cache really doesn't really generate any benefit. The cache is trying to get access again. There's never actually have that access.
No, it would be good to see whether they read after writes for that specific case. I'm just curious now based on Jason's input. I'm just curious to see whether that's happening or it's something else, whether it's two reads.
Right. Yeah.
If it's two reads, then it's a different story, very different story than read after write.
Yeah, just use my method. Just do the same analysis, but skip all the writes.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that, the number will tell you whether it's a read after write
or not.
And I think that's, in that case, it seems to be a little bit dubious to turn on, turn off.
Yes.
Because that's basically the spike.
Then turning it on and off doesn't make any difference.
For that particular case.
So the question is, what happens in the worst case? I think you're talking about a case where it's benign. It doesn't help, or it doesn't hurt either. But are there situations where it could hurt and hurt badly, like turning it on and off? I think that's really going to be an important question.
If it's being cut, I think locality will tell, right? So if you say the situation is like this, and you cut here, right? So that's the sort of what we think of might be a good case, right? If you cut here, we have, the likelihood to cut in the edge is probably very small. It's cut here. So basically, we're going to fix this part in cache and be able to ignore everything to the right?
Yeah.
So if there is a locality issue, because when you turn off, you basically say locality doesn't matter.
Within that phase. Yeah.
Because I'm not going to actually bring new things into my cache.
Yeah.
So on the assumption the new things will be useless or whatever in the things that's more useful.
Yeah, it's as important as the other guys.
Yeah.
Which is why the rank-based on and off is able to deal with that, which Ricardo is working on.
It's probably there's some combination there.
Yeah, with that finer point. Which is locality within a single phase of
ideas. Yes.
I think that's an interesting point, and that's something we need to investigate more. And here, with what Stephen is doing, we're completely ignoring that. But that's a really important thing. For that, having a ghost replacement simulation might actually be worth saying, okay, for certain phases, there is locality within the phase, and the ghost simulation of whatever replacement policy we are turning off will tell us if we are doing the right thing or not. And then we switch it on.
So I think my suggestion right now, before we move on to devise new mechanisms into this cache, I think we should look at the data itself. We look at one phase. So the general question is, all the faces that we detected actually exhibited the same
similar
behavior.
Yeah. Are they similar? Are there lots of twos?
Right,
twos are dominant.
Right. And also, if that's the case, is that, can we confirm that's a read after write, or a write after read?
Right. Yeah.
So if that's the case, that sort of...
It should change our direction.
Right.
I think it would also be important to look at some of the other traces now that we have more clarity as to what we're looking for. Remind me why we decided to hone in on the MSR traces? Because they had more face behavior, or no?
I think we're just looking for more something that
they were working sets in the MSU.
There were larger, more accesses and more real world. I think we're looking at
Cheetah, for instance, mail traces. The mail traces in that we have are pretty realistic. That's the only mail server that we run in our department for all the people in the department. So they are probably very realistic, and we should analyze those guys. The homes, well, somewhat realistic. The webmail and online, those guys are probably not very real because we are tracing only the operating system disk, not the data disk for those two machines. So it would be good to look at some of these other workloads as well. Mail and homes.
So if you look at...
The homes are a little bit crazy though. I think the homes are, you know, some of those homes are basically doing nothing at all. Whereas others are doing a lot and there's a lot of change.
And the homes are...
But mail is something which is a lot more promising in my mind.
Just look at the names. I'm not really familiar with the trace itself, but just look at the names. They have different kind of traces.
Yeah, there's the home. That's home 0, home 1,
yeah,
metadata
that's
server.
Probably the home, the NFS home directory.
And then there's metadata server.
Yeah.
And there's
a printer.
Printer, maybe projects.
Projects, I'm not sure what that is. Could be computation, or could be whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's proxy,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's web there.
Yeah.
And there's web development. I don't know what the difference. There's a user.
Yeah.
So... Is there somewhere that actually this can be described as what the particular use of these traces? Because what I meant is we are looking at this.
Are being accessed?
We're looking at two
source,
right? Source 2.1, right? So we're here, right? Something
yeah.
here, and that's a particular type. But
mm-hmm.
there are so many different types.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just the, you know, pick out another trait, you know, sort of take out one
of each type,
of each type, and just look at the data. What's it like? With write and without write, and so that's sort of at least give a better sense of what phases.
Well, first of all, we need to detect phases in each of those guys. I mean, without detecting phases, and that has been a challenge as well, right?
Oh,
some of them
don't have phases.
Some of them don't have phases.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is that since these traces are 1 week, I'm surprised that there are no phases in them.
What kind of things that you say there's no phase? Can we look at another one? Just
so here, this is 1 week.
This is 1 week, yes.
This is 1 week, and then
right.
that
then
means
there's
like over 3 days or something like that, there was hardly any new accesses, although there were lots of accesses.
Oh.
Right? So over 3 days, the same stuff got accessed in the previous 3 days, I guess.
And this is, what is source? Is someone that doing development, code development?
Do we know the description of that?
I don't know. Maybe it's in the README or something.
It should be, yeah. So that's source, and then we have a whole bunch of others.
Let's look at just anyone, like web.
Web.
That should have... There's
some stability, but it's a slow ramp-up. And it all depends on how much cache there is.
Mm-hmm.
Is this cache dependent?
What's up?
Cache size dependent? So here, for instance, here, we see that although this guy keeps increasing, there is stability when we look at only the past few accesses. So,
past few accesses, okay. What?
So the items that Stephen, why does this keep increasing? Whereas this is
that's
stable?
The LRU that only has size of 4 × 128 megabytes.
Oh, this one, yeah.
So it's too small to contain the entire phase. So why? I mean, the working set. So while the working set stops at about 1.2 gigabytes,
yeah,
it's not able to contain the entire thing. So it keeps missing, increasing the.
No, I thought this is like infamous, like,
size.
The red one is the 100 cat.
The green is the ghost LRU missing.
Oh, okay. So there's... So why is it it's a 5 million axis? Is it actually a normal number? I mean, this is not really large, is that, from my perspective?
Let's see. 5 million. 5 times 10 to the 6 times, let's say each axis is 10 milliseconds. 10 minus 3. That is 50,000
seconds. 50,000
seconds.
That's a few hours.
That's 13.8 hours of continuous. If it's continuously running, this trace will take 13.8 hours, but there are idle times. If it's continuously busy,
right?
If a disk axis takes 1 millisecond, 10 milliseconds.
Oh, okay. So I see. But in terms of this is 7 days, right?
Seven days.
So there's
a lot of idle time, and so it's
14. Well, over 14, sort of that's the utilization of the solar, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know whether that's what that means, but.
That's what it is. It's probably an over-provisioned server, over-provisioned storage, not server.
Said web. Who knows what the web, the nature of the web here.
So here's another one.
It's about the same, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is all the same trace. This is a different cache size.
So you are looking at this as the face, stability of the face here?
Well, this whole thing now becomes a stable face, but that's not right. We have to look, we need some other...
Well, if it's a flat, it's definitely a face.
Yeah.
Right? So, but if it's increasing, does not mean it's not a face.
Yeah, because you have to look at some
right,
smaller
right,
granularity.
Right, exactly. So,
so that's why we came up with this other metric where we look at only a past few, and then you see this is increasing, and but then there's some stability if you look at it.
The other way around, right? The RRU is the green.
So I know. So the LRU is at a certain cache size, right? So here, you're simulating LRU at 128 megabytes. So you keep continuously seeing new data. But if you look at the whole lifetime, if your cache size was much larger, there will be periods of stability.
Right. So I see that as the cache size bigger and bigger is actually getting closer to to the red one, right? Red
so
line
here,
is
I mean, this may be a phase, actually. This is probably a phase, and we should look at this duration. This is probably a phase.
Right.
The initial, this is all warm up, so it's hard to say what's
going on. So what, you know, the my take here is, this is if this is a phase detection algorithm, all right? So, and all these flat plateaus here are faces, right? That's within the face. However, you can't really tell what's going on here, right? Because these are substantial things going on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's keep increasing, but we don't know why it's increasing. And whether there is a certain level of face there, right?
Yeah. So there are some, I see what you mean, that there are small plateaus in here. These could all be small phases, right?
Well, the plateaus, you're plotting the accumulated
mm-hmm.
number, right?
Yeah.
And so that's
So here, if you look at this one, for instance, so there are plateaus here, and then there is another plateau over here, plateau here, long plateau here, and so on. So there are plateaus, but the thing is that they're all different granularities, so it's not clear what is the granularity we should focus on.
Mm. So there's a phase detection.
Phase detection
issue.
Is a big issue.
Yeah.
And right now, we are just doing it manually based on some instinct. It's not good enough.
Well, certainly all of these have faces. They're just large and small. All of these are establishing some faces there. I mean, you know, in the vague definition of faces.
Yeah.
Right?
But there is some stability.
There is some stability. For example, just take for this one. So even though it's actually gradually increasing, but it's increasing very slow. Right?
Yeah.
So this is increasing. So even if it's a cache miss, it's actually, you know, there's spontaneous cache miss here and there over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So that means there's certain level of stability.
So
yeah.
But it's just here to here is probably
right.
A stable period. But then, I mean, the question is, do we consider this whole period as stable or not? Just because there was one miss at some point, should we say that it's a new phase? Probably not. So we need to have better metrics to define what phases.
Since we have 20/20 vision, meaning that we can look back, right? So we know which access is no longer being accessed. Right? So for example, you accumulate new ones.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is, can we get rid of the old ones? Of course, not in the real algorithm. Because real algorithm, you can't look back. You can't predict the future. You can't look forward. But we can, right? For this
trace. What people do to look into the future is actually look into the past.
Right, yeah, so that they think that the history predicts the future.
But
what I meant here is we know what access is no longer needed. So what I meant here is we can make another plot of the number of unique accesses that will be accessed in the future. And we plot it over time.
Within the phase or?
Just plot the whole thing. Because that tells us how to say that, useful things, right, should be in the cache because there's an access somewhere in the future.
Okay, and so let's say we have that plot. Now, what do we do with it?
You can see whether there is a face. Not for face detection, but to confirm face exists. In this kind of traces.
You're saying looking at a horizontal stretch?
You look at, you know, there are unique accesses there.
Mm-hmm.
So that means if in that figure you go up and down all the time. Go up and down all the time.
Yeah.
So that captures the working set.
Even within a phase, you will see that some items may be accessed in the beginning part of the phase and some are not accessed, and some are accessed in the latter part of the phase. So the number will slowly, even within a phase, it can actually
drop. So what I meant is, this is the definition phase is so vague right now. There is no mathematical closed form for it.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to come up with the quantifiable, something with a number we can play with. So if you just look at unique accesses, which will be referenced in the future, these are things are valuable to be kept in the cache, if possible, right? So now, if it's not possible...
So the question
possible,
is, how far into the future are we looking?
And then we can either look at time, or you look at frequency, or frequency divided by time, whatever that metric that we come up with later on to do the ranking, which one is more important, which one is less important. But at least we can see the working set.
Yeah, so the only trick there is that as the trouble we ran into with these plots, if you're looking too far into the future, you might be looking at an entirely different phase. And a different working set with the same item.
Well,
or even the same working set, but much much later in time, so it's not relevant.
I can easily come up with, not easily, I think I can imagine I can come up with a metric for that. You know, for example, let's suppose we have a figure. Okay, so the figure is like this, right? So
yeah, you can do that.
So the we look at over time,
time here. We look at the unique number of addresses which will be that to be referenced. In future. So what I meant by that is that particular access somehow down the road will be accessed, right? And of course, this is a pure sum. I can weight the sum by the distances I'm looking at, right? So I can do a degree and say, well, your access, so long, in the future. That is the value is actually degrading. Whatever that value we do, and we can come up with a figure, right here, right. So the figure is I don't know, going up and down. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Look like. So what I meant here is now, if this is the working set with importance, the importance of course is either
you're getting the
pure
size. You're getting the size of
that working. I guess I tweak the term working set here.
Yeah.
I'm just saying important addresses, important something that I need.
Yeah.
So now if your cache size is here,
yeah.
Right? If your cache size is here, that means not necessarily everything above this, but you're going to lose some of the references and stuff like that causes the misses. So that is what I see maybe the up. If you have the future vision, that you see
the best we can do with our algorithm.
We can do with our algorithm, right? Something like that.
Sure.
Why am I actually getting there?
Leo and Ricardo did something similar with their future analysis. They looked at future axes to see how their algorithm, what is the best that their algorithm could potentially do.
Although I would have to say. This metric is not ideal, as you say. There's some access at the very beginning, some access at the very end.
It might not be as steppy as you want it to be.
Right. So, but I think we can come up with. I guess I have to think about why we come up with this metric. So what I meant is that
you can look at the past and do the unique number of accesses. Addresses to be that are referenced in the past, then we come up with this plot.
If you look at all,
huh?
Right? So if you look
at all,
right?
All
because this definition actually means that you're gonna discount those numbers which are not gonna be referenced in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are not useful, right?
Sure. But I'm saying from a practical standpoint, you cannot use that metric to do anything.
Not.
You have to look in the past, which then we come to here. But then the only difference is that we are not weighting in any way, or we're not using any. We're just saying, okay, if it's in the past, it's part of the working set. We're not going to weight it. So weighting might actually be a useful technique here.
Yeah, because that incorporate time in there, right? Incorporate how relevant this access is in terms of ranking.
Yeah.
Right.
So Jason, I think I agree with the direction that you're thinking in, and maybe if you have some time, you can think about what kind of plots you could plot, or Steven could plot, or you could even get the data from him, the scripts
right.
from him, and do some
plotting
yourself.
I agree. So maybe I'll query ask Steven to show me how to process those CSV files.
I think he has already lots of scripts, right?
Right, yeah. So,
are they all available in the Git repo?
I don't think all of them are available in the Git simply because I have them located in my home directory. So
one thing for you to do is to, at least use the Git repo as a backup for all the stuff that you're doing. Even if you lose your hard drive on your MacBook, and I know that you don't have a backup, you have something.
Well, I backup certain folders, but I don't use the automated process.
Mm-hmm. Or you do backup?
Yeah, I have a backup, but...
You have a backup? You're using a like, time machine, that sort of thing?
No,
we talked about that. Yeah. I do that. I need it. I just got this one. I need it. I'm not trusting the department's backup, which happens once probably 1 or 2 days. And
once
always,
a day.
That's what they told you. And sometimes that there's a clock or something that they could skip. And there will be potential issues that they will detect many days later.
So you have a time machine on your desk?
I need to get a hard drive.
The hard drive.
I need to get a hard drive, plug it in, and that is going to do our day backup. And that's what I think is I don't need to rely on.
Yeah. That's what I have at home. So my laptop gets backed up. My home machine gets backed up.
Yeah.
This I rely on the department.
Yeah. But...
I don't use that all that often. Whenever I'm in the
in
the office, I use my my laptop actually.
Yeah.
This is only for display.
Yeah, I can. I have some complaints that I meant to do that myself. You just got this, right?
Yeah.
And take a look at your the control panel, whatever it is.
Yeah. The dashboard.
Yeah. The control. The whatever setup thing. Going sharing right there. Yeah. So the administrator, I saw them actually do this. They can log on the machine without you know and watch what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right now.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Wow.
Everything. I turn it off. And so I don't like people watch over my shoulder.
Yeah. The remote management, you mean,
yeah.
Here?
Don't tell anybody else.
Yeah. Well, no, I know that they could do that because I had some issue with my machine.
Yeah.
So John said, oh, let me see your screen. And he just started moving my mouse.
Well,
it's convenient because now they can. Well, I can. I guess enable it.
Well, you come to my screen and do that sort of thing, or I'm gonna actually turn it on manually and say now you can have more control.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like anybody with administrative password can actually see what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. This is the remote management thing, right?
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah. It's a beside point, but I'm just
I see what you mean. Yeah, I don't like that either. I'm looking at all kinds of personal stuff here.
At least I'm partially system. I know what I'm doing. I don't want people to mess up my computer I'm using for the moment. But anyway, so Stephen, can I sort of, I need a sort of like a 10 minutes, 15 minutes or half an hour at most. Just tutorials to go through how to process the CSV file. It should be simple. Probably less than 10 minutes.
If you really want, I can make the CSV into...
distributed.
Just... What?
Oh, you mean the...
I can change it into a different format or something.
I think we'll just keep the original... Because whatever we process, in the end, we have to go back and say, oh, I forgot to read and write. And you go back again. And also, if I see that the data size is multiple of 512, for example, if I choose the block size, I need to reprocess it again, so on and so forth. So probably just one line, how I'm actually be able to read and be able to filter out different fields. That's good enough for me to carry on there. I hope all of them have been the same format.
Yeah, all the same format.
Including the FIU?
FIU is a different format.
Right. So I think I processed the FIU before. And the issue with that is the size. You process one trace and then you probably your hard disk is done.
Yes.
You have to get the data and locate whatever it is, and that's sort
of it's got a lot.
Yeah.
It's big.
It's big, yeah, I know. But anyway, if at some point, or just send me the line saying, here's how I'm using Python or C, whatever, Perl, I'm processing, this is how I...
It's a simple Python program that I made. It imports a CSV module, And then from there, it's...
Yeah, yeah. That's as long as I think the format, you can tell me what I'm doing.
Yeah, all you need to do for that is check out the README file on the Cambridge website. And it'll tell you which
field,
items...
Which column is for what.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that works, you can do whatever you want or something.
Yeah. So with that, I will.
Let's work through the Git repo for all the sharing, because doing it through email is not a good idea. So
okay.
You just post everything in
if
the Git repo so that
you're saying
you can,
here is how I, the pearl for reading.
Because then what will happen is that in the future you don't have to go through the same steps with another person.
Okay.
Right? Then it's good. We'll have documented and everything available when you need it.
Yeah. Right now, as it is, I have the Python program changing from a CSV into a regular space-separated column-wise. So that way I can just redirect that as standard input into a C program for the...
You have to learn how to do pipes.
That is a pipe in, but I don't want to have to...
Do that again.
Do it again, so I have it saved for that, and then I'll just go from there.
But if you can just sort of have some
little
write-up about the process, that's all I need for the original CSV file to get the relative fields. That's good enough for me, and I think I can get the trace file. If you have a direct pointer to where it is, that's even better.
Do you have access to the same server then?
Yeah. Jason has an account on the Git server.
No, I meant the C1
N10.
I'm not going to put the Cambridge traces on the...
No, the Cambridge traces are actually just the URL. I mean,
yeah.
Everybody can go there without...
Yeah, everybody can get it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I've been there
once.
URL,
downloading them takes a while.
A very long while.
Yeah. That's the only thing.
Yeah,
that's
why the problem.
They're huge.
Get it locally somewhere where you can access it.
Can we have a server
which
just for
that?
The
we
traces?
The C1 N10 server, I think it's in the Scilab.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing is, I don't know if he has access to it.
Well, Jace, we'll have to create one, but that's doable.
Okay. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have access, right?
I have access.
Yeah.
So,
getting the access to Jason is not a big deal.
It's good clicking.
It's, I think I actually take it from... Leo, who has actual Cambridge traces on his
account.
So I'll just take it and then I process them on my home directory.
Meaning that you just read off of his directory and then process them.
Yeah,
on that machine.
Yeah,
right. That's fine. So
as long as it's somewhere.
Yeah, it's locally here. I mean, you don't have to.
In that case, I don't have to go to the internet.
Yeah, so we can do it, and I'll ask Leo to create an account for Jason on the C1 N10.
Okay.
All right, great.
All right. So we're going to have, next time, we're going to have some data from other traces.
Yeah.
If possible.
Yeah.
You want
more phases and similar analysis to what you were doing today with the other traces.
And sort of get rid of the right.
Yeah.
I think that's important. At least we have confirmation of what's going on. I think that's important.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, I have to read the trace again. But that's
not a problem.
Yeah, but I mean, rights, getting rid of the rights is okay for this temporary analysis, but eventually, if you have one read and one write, then yes, it's okay to get rid of the write. But if you have multiple writes to the same location, then a write hit also becomes important.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
All right.
So we'll meet next.